name's Quincy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Quincy. We love you, Quincy. Lots and lots and lots. Oh, what is it?
Oh my God, I'm in the very strange position of having to explain why pot right now. Which is hilarious because I too, the first time I ever went to a meeting where WIPA was happening was like, oh my God, these disrespectful little twats, like they need to shut up, right? And it's funny because, you know, when I got sober, I was 4, just kidding, close. When I got sober, I was 18 years old. It was last century, obviously. And we didn't do WIPA. WIPA was around. WIPA started a long, long, long time ago. We looked it up recently, and I can't remember what year. It was like 49, 72, something. I have no idea. But it's been around for a really long time. And when I got sober, WIPA was not popular in this area. It was not something that we did. We didn't go to those meetings. It wasn't even talked about. I didn't even learn about WIPA until I was like 12 years sober, and I went to my first WIPA convention in San Diego, and it was a whole different experience than anything I had ever done before, ever. And I was cuckoo, right? Hi, Diane. I was cuckoo when I got sober. Like, we did crazy stuff. Like, I want to, before I forget, I want to thank Hank. Cut. I want to thank Hank. That's really not easy to say.
I'm sorry.
For asking me to come and do this, because this is an honor and a privilege, no matter what time of day it's at, and where it's at, and I appreciate the honor. So thank you, and I appreciate all of you being here. So thank you for being here as well. But my first San Fernando Valley AA convention was in 1982. So this is my 43rd San Fernando Valley AA convention, which I know you're all saying, how is that possible? She's only 37 years old. Well, I showed up in a jar first. No, I'm just kidding. You know, the first time I came to the San Fernando Valley Convention, I was it was my first year in Alateen. I was 13 years old. It was at the Sheraton Universal in the good old days when that was the good times, right? Bernard, do you remember that? And we were part of the reason that AA got kicked out of the Sheraton Universal was because we threw too many parties, we had too much sex in the stairwells, and we were too drunk at too many conventions. But that was my first convention, and I've come every year since then. And, you know, it's kind of like a high school reunion for me. Every year I come, and I get to see who's still left, right? There's me and Bernard, basically. And I get to experience this every year, and it is a part of my sobriety. And I'm grateful for it, because the San Fernando Valley Convention was my first convention, but, I've gone to conventions all over the country as a result of starting at the San Fernando Valley Convention. And I'm grateful for it. Conventions are a very different experience than meetings and even, you know, the other events that we'd go to, but conventions are so much fun. And I want to welcome all of you guys that are new to Alcoholics Anonymous.
Sorry about that.
Oh, come in, come in, come sit. I've been waiting for you to get to the good stuff. Well, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I wish you the greatest adventure of your life. When I got here, I did not think that that's what I was going to have, right? I was 18 years old. I was like, I might as well be dead. Like, I'm never going to have fun ever again in my whole life, and I got to hang out with all these weird people, and I don't want to be here, you know? And I wasn't really staying. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous to stay. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous to get my mother to calm down. Right? Because she was losing her mind because I was out of control, and I was out of control because she was crazy, and at least that's what I thought at the time. And so for me, it was really about, I was just getting sober to get her to calm down. I didn't understand what it meant to be alcoholic. I didn't understand really what the purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous really was, other than like a bunch of people who used to party naked and drunk now party sober and naked. So I didn't really understand the purpose of what Alcoholics Anonymous was even about. And but I'm super grateful for the adventure that I've had here. My sobriety date is February 1st, 1988. Yes, that makes me almost 56 years old. And looking good, I might say. And, and with any kind of luck, and if I stay alive in 2 weeks, I'll be 37 years sober. And that's a long time. It's a long time. I want to thank my sponsees that are here, who I love madly, and my husband, who escorted me down the elevator to get here. And, you know, usually he drives me to places. We're going to hope and pray he doesn't fall asleep this time. Let's see what happens, right? Does anybody have a Sharpie? Oh, no, we need a Sharpie so we can start drawing things on his face. Anyway, I got sober February 1st of 1988. My sponsor is Terry B. in San Diego, and my home group is the Principles Before Personalities Big Book Study in Sherman Oaks on Thursday nights. So if you ever find yourself lost in Sherman Oaks on a Thursday night around 7:30, come find us. We would love to have you. And, you know, I talk about those three things because, again, like I said, when I got here, I wasn't looking for any of those three things. I was not, you know, I didn't want to give you my sobriety date because that may have meant I'd had my last drink and I wasn't really sure that had happened yet, right? I absolutely did not want a sponsor because I didn't want anybody suggesting to me what I could or could not do differently. Like, I got this. Get out of my business, right? And I didn't want a home group because the truth is if you knew me, you wouldn't like me. And this way I don't like you first, so we're even, right? And that was literally the thinking that I came into Alcoholics Anonymous with. I had been here for a while because of Alateen, as I said before, so I really thought I knew what was going on here. And I knew what I was doing, so I didn't need any help. I just needed to get sober, but I didn't need any help. Just leave me alone, right? I'll give you some more important information so you can judge me properly. I grew up in the Valley. Again, doesn't make me an alcoholic, but it helped. And my father was an alcoholic, and who actually, Diane, used to know my dad. And he worked in the music industry. Most of you aren't old enough to know what album covers are, but he designed those, so you can Google that later. And he was a really interesting guy. And he was the kind of drunk who had like a drug, you know, blood alcohol level of like 1,000 at any given moment. And he wasn't like an angry drunk. He wasn't violent. He didn't touch us in funny places. Like I got really lucky with the alcoholic dad lottery. He was a lot of fun. He was the kind of person that everybody wanted to hang out with and party with. And the only reason we had chores every weekend was because we needed to clean the house because people were coming over for a party. Like, every weekend there was a party at my house because that was the kind of person my dad was. And he was the love of my life. He was my most favorite person on the planet. He was my soulmate. He was, you know, everything to me. And my first real drug of choice was his attention, right? Nothing made me happier than my dad looking at me and smiling at me. And I would do anything to get his attention, whether it was sing, whether it was dance, whether it was scream, yell, whatever. I didn't really care. I would do whatever I could to be his favorite and to get his attention. And that was just what it was like. I have a younger sister and a younger brother. And they got in the way of getting my attention with my dad, so I needed something else, right? And, you know, I don't really remember my first drink. You know, when you grow up in an alcoholic home, there's booze everywhere. So it was, I don't really remember the first one. But I do remember, like, hanging out with him in his studio. He had turned the guest house on our property into his art studio. And he would go out there and paint these giant paintings of my mother naked, whatever. And I would lay on the floor and just watch him paint naked pictures of my mother. And he would drink scotch on the rocks. Like, his favorite thing was scotch on the rocks. And when he was done drinking the scotch, he would always give me the glass because I wanted the rocks, right? And I can remember to this day what those rocks tasted like. Like, I can salivate just thinking about it. Like, I can remember how good just eating the ice out of his glass felt in my body, right? So again, like, I don't really remember the first drunk, but I do remember my first drink, and I remember it like it was yesterday. I have cousins that are older than me. I have a cousin that's 8 years older than me, and she loved to turn me on to stuff, right? Like, that was her favorite thing to do, was to try to freak me out, right? And her, like, she would teach me how to dye my hair or shave my head or, you know, tie my bondage pants. Important things. And and she was graduating from high school, and she invited me to this party at her house. And I just remember the kid that I was before that night and the kid that I was after that night was very, very different. And the kid that I was before that night was this kid who was obsessed with what you were thinking of me. I was constantly worried about whether I was funny enough, whether I was cute enough, whether or not my butt looked cute in these jeans, whether or not I liked the right bands, whether I swore correctly, like whatever it was. I was constantly worried about what you were thinking about me. And, it, you know, to the point where I had so much anxiety going on all the time that it literally felt like I was on fire underneath my skin. And I didn't know that that's how I felt. It was just because I was that way all the time. So who knew that there was anything different, right? And so I go to this party, and this, you know, this night was no different. I was worried about being cute. I was worried about being funny. I was worried about people thinking I was too young, right? At 12 years old, I was taller than everybody else. I had bigger boobs. They haven't grown since, but we don't need to get into that. And, one of them did, but again, we don't need to get into that. And I just remember thinking, you know, I didn't look like I was 12, but in my mind I was like 6 all the time. And so I walked into this party, and they're sitting around card tables playing quarters. Now, I recently had somebody ask me what quarters is. I'm not going to explain it. If you don't know, you're not really alcoholic. I'm just saying. But I walked into this party, and they were sitting around card tables playing quarters. And I had never played before. I was 12 years old, for crying out loud, right? But I walked in, and I sat down like I'd been playing all 12 years of my life, right? Because that's one of my superpowers as an alcoholic, is I can walk into any situation and adapt immediately. I can be whatever I need, wherever I need, whoever I need in any given moment. And this moment was no different. And I walked in and I sat down and I started to drink with these guys. And it was the magic night, right? It was the magic night because the alcohol started to go into my system. And as soon as I started to feel it, right? As soon as I started to feel it, like my arms got lighter, right? My chest got lighter, you know, everything was hilarious, right? But for the first time in all 12 years of my life, everything that was going on between my ears had stopped. And it was as quiet as that moment we just had. And that was the magic of alcohol for me, right? I loved it. I loved that feeling. I didn't even know that that was a feeling that could happen, right? Did I become a daily drinker at 12? No, don't be ridiculous. But did I become obsessed from that point forward as to what did I have to do? Where did I have to go? Who did I have to know in order for that to happen again? Absolutely, right? I went from being this kid who was pretty decent at school. I was obsessed with being a prima ballerina, and I was a pretty decent child at home, to all of a sudden having a very different life, right? I would go to school. I would do what I was supposed to do. I'd come home, pretend to do homework. I would take, do my chores and all that kind of stuff. I'd have dinner with my family, and I'd be in bed at 7 o'clock, right? Which is not normal for a teenager, in case anybody has one, but that's not normal. And I would go to sleep, and I would literally take a nap. I would wait for my parents to, like, go to bed, and then I would slide out my window, get in a cab in Encino, and take a cab to Hollywood and go clubbing all night with my friends, right? And so I was living this very different life, and I would stay out until 4 o'clock in the morning drinking and doing drugs and hanging out with boys and hanging out with gangs and, you know, going to all these crazy places and doing all kinds of crazy things. And I had felt like I had arrived, right? Like, I was cool. I was fun. I was hanging out with the cool kids. We were doing cool stuff. And I was happy, right? And as I was taking off in my beautiful alcoholic plight, my father's alcoholism was bottoming, right? He was hitting a bottom. He had a grand mal seizure at 52 years old. 52 years old, younger than me at the moment, and 52 years old, and he ended up in treatment in 1981. And in 1981, rehab was not common. They were not on every corner, in every house, on every block, in every neighborhood like they are now. There was maybe 3 rehabs in the country at the time. And because he worked in the music business, being an alcoholic was super, super uncool, Like, it couldn't have been more uncool. Like, today, if you're an alcoholic and you're in the music business, you leave with a record deal. Like, that's how it goes, right? But back then, it was bad. And he ended up in rehab in Santa Monica, and my mom became obsessed with trying to get him sober and was chasing him in and out of rehabs and in and out of meetings. And just, you know, if any of you saw the skit last night, that was my mother. That was absolutely my mother. And she, so she was busy trying to get him sober. And, you know, eventually the Al-Anons got a hold of her. Do we have any Al-Anons in here? I know there's got to be at least, okay, so we're safe. Okay, we're good. But the Al-Anons got a hold of her like the Al-Anons do, right? And they said, hey, lady, we have a meeting for you too. And they took her to a meeting. And at that meeting, they said, you know, if you have kids, we have a meeting for your kids as well, right? And I remember my mom coming home and saying, oh, God, you're going to love it. They've got meetings for you guys, and you can go and sit in these meetings and learn about what's wrong with your dad. And I'm thinking, I would rather poke myself in the eye with a hot poker than go sit in a room with a bunch of lame kids talking about you people. Like, who cares? Like, I don't care. What's happening? I didn't even know it was happening, right? But it was the first time I'd ever heard the word alcoholism, and that one word would change my life from that point forward, right? I lost that battle with my mom because I was 13, and I remember just thinking, if I have to go to this dumb meeting, I'll just get as stoned as I can handle. That way I'm not really there to begin with, right? So I got as loaded as I could get and got in the back of my mom's car, and I started making plans, right? Like, I'm not going to this meeting, right? We're driving over the hill. I'm like, I'll go sit in a bush, right? I'll go for a walk, right? I'll go rob a liquor store. Like, I will go anywhere, but I'm not going to that dumb meeting, right? And she pulls up in front of the church on San Vicente in Brentwood, and there's all these kids out front, right, that are roughly my age, which was, you know, not my favorite. And she pulls up, and I look out the window, and I saw the most beautiful boy I've ever seen in my entire life. And I went to Alateen religiously for the next 7 years. Because right? This is a program of attraction rather than promotion. We don't really care what attracts you. Just stay, right? And I did. We would go and we would sit in these meetings and we would talk about what a hot mess our parents were. And then we would go try it. And not everybody was doing that, apparently. But me and my friends, we definitely were doing that. And it was great. You know, I had no idea that, you know, what I was supposed to be learning in Alateen and what was happening to me would one day collide in a way that would end me in this moment right here. But I was having a great time. My mom saw absolutely nothing wrong with putting her 13-year-old daughter on a train from L.A. to San Diego with a couple $100 in her pocket, which is where I met Piper, on the way to the SoCal convention in San Diego, right? She didn't ask me where I was staying. She didn't ask me, like, who I was going with, right? She just gave me a couple $100 and put me on a train and said, she's going to be with the AA. She'll be safe, right? So you can only imagine what a 13-year-old with a couple $100 in her pocket is going to do in a hotel with her friends, right, where there's 16 teenagers in one hotel room, right? The fact that I ended up drunk, butt naked, covered in shaving cream at an AA convention really shouldn't shock any of you, right? But that's what my alcoholism look like, because let's be really, really clear, right? There's no such thing as social drinking at 12. Like, there's no such thing. It's not a thing, right? Like, I was drinking for the effect produced by alcohol from the second I started drinking. I wanted that feeling of out. I wanted that feeling of numb. I wanted that feeling of I don't care. Right? I wanted that feeling of I don't have to be me. I don't have to be responsible for what I think or how I feel or what I do. I just want to be out. I loved to blackout. I was always aiming for blackout. Didn't always happen, but I was always aiming for blackout. Right? And being in it, it didn't matter where I was. Didn't matter if I was in an AA convention. Didn't matter if I was at a club in Hollywood. Didn't matter if I was in my house or at a party from high school. I would drink to blackout because that was what alcohol did for me. Right? And I didn't know how to drink any other way. I didn't know there was an option to, like, sip.
Oh, yeah.
Who sips anything? Like, I don't even drink water that way. Like, I either drink all the water or I drink none of the water. Like, that's just who I am, right? So I ended up in a lot of really weird places, doing a lot of really weird things with a lot of really weird people, and a lot of weird things happened to me, right? you know, waking up in alleys across the street from Grumman's Chinese Theater with my clothes torn and blood all over me, sleeping next to a bum, like, you know, at 15 years old. That wasn't normal, right? That's not normal behavior for a 15-year-old. That's not normal behavior for a 40-year-old either, so in case you're wondering, that's just not normal behavior. Like, those aren't the kinds of things that happen to normal people. And because I'd been around Alcoholics Anonymous, and because I'd hear you guys talk about what had happened to you when you were out there drinking, I knew that what was happening to me wasn't normal. I knew it wasn't normal. And so just because it wasn't normal, you know, and I knew that I was the only one that was happening to, I really just believed that getting sober would solve the problem. Because I believed that this was about drugs and alcohol. I believed that alcoholism, it's very deceiving. It has the word alcohol in the word alcoholism. So you think it's about alcohol. And let's be really clear, right? It's super important to have a weird effect when you drink, right? It's a weird thing. However, it's just the symptom that tells you there's something wrong, right? It's just the symptom. But I didn't know that. I really believed that if I just got rid of the drugs and alcohol, that everything would be fine, right? And let's be clear, some things did die of neglect immediately, right? I would love to say the naked thing died of neglect, but it didn't, right? But I wasn't getting in as much trouble. I wasn't waking up in strange places. I knew exactly where I was, you know? Some things did die of neglect when the drugs and the alcohol were gone. But the thing that came back faster than anything else was the toxic insecurity, right? The unimaginable, overwhelming anxiety and the wicked, 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 you know, emotional immaturity came rushing back to the surface, and all of a sudden I have no skills. I have no idea how to talk to people. I have no idea how to behave. I have no idea how to be a normal person. And I'm so uncomfortable that all my character defects are running my life that I don't know how to stay in one place long enough to make a difference, right? I'm bouncing from friend group, to people, to people. I never told the same story twice. Every time I'd go to a club, I'd give out a different name, a different set of phone numbers. Like, I didn't know anything, right? I could not be in my skin. And one more time, all that fire that I felt like I had escaped underneath my skin came right back, and I was on fire one more time, you know? But because I really believed that this was just about drugs and alcohol, and all I had to do was go to meetings, right? I just kept going to meetings, and I would go to meetings, and I would go to meetings, and I went to lots of meetings, right? And lots and lots and lots of meetings, because there were hot guys in meetings, and I was on the hunt, right? So I just replaced one obsession with another. Like, oh, I can't drink, but I can, you know how that sentence ends. And that's what I did. We went to meetings, and we went to events, and we went to conventions, and I kept myself really busy in Alcoholics Anonymous, just running around doing stuff. But again, I don't have a sponsor, right? I'm not reading the big book. I'm not really interested in the steps, right? Me and some old white guy, what do he and I have in common anyway? Like, why do I need to read the book? You people are so sick, you should do the steps. Really, I mean, have you seen you? You should do the steps. But I'm not nearly as sick as you, right? So I stayed in Alcoholics Anonymous for a while, and, you know, eventually, if you stay around here long enough, you'll cop a resentment in somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous. Ever happened to anybody in this room? Oh, only a few of you? Okay, fantastic, right? So, you know, I did that, right? I copped a resentment at some. It was actually around the San Fernando Valley Convention, now that I think of it. Was it? No, it was SoCal. It was the SoCal Convention. I was part of the SoCal Convention, and I had mastered to pull off something at this convention that I wanted all the credit for, because that's how insecure I was. And this other woman took credit for my wonderful find, right? Which made me want to slit her throat. But I used that as a reason to build a case. Any case builders? Anybody like to be? You're all a bunch of liars. Okay. Any case builders? Oh, yeah. Like, I'm a good case builder. I am a lawyer by obsession, and I am great at being right about how wrong you are. You are so wrong. Oh, my God. And I'm so right about how wrong you are that all I have to do to solve that problem is get rid of you. Right? Like, it couldn't possibly have anything to do with me. It has everything to do with you. So I start building a case about why you people in AA, y'all are drama queens and gossip mongers. And I am, too. But we're not talking about me here. We are talking about you. And I got to go. right? And how alcoholic could I really be? I mean, at this point, I'm 18 years old, right? Like, maybe it was just a phase, you know? Like, you know, I was 18. Like, how much of an alcoholic could I really, really be at that point? I mean, seriously, right? And within 20 minutes of making that decision, I was out and off to the races one more time. And any of you ever, like, been sober and gotten loaded again? Ever? Any of you? Oh, good. So you all know how hard it is, right, to get all those happy, shiny AA people that are stuck in your head drunk, right? You got to get them drunk, too, right? Because Diane's in your head going, oh, keep coming back. And Sari's over there saying, call before you pick up a drink, right? And Mike's over there saying, why aren't you at a meeting? Blah, 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 whatever it is, right? So I got to get all three of them drunk before I'm even drunk, right? And so all of these people have to be drunk in my head because my head's loud, right? It's loud. It's so loud. It screams in there, right? And it took a lot more alcohol to get me to that level of out that I used to enjoy before I got sober the first time, right? Because that's one thing AA will do. It will ruin your drinking, right? Because now you can't think. Now you can't think like a normal person or take a drink like a somewhat normal person without going, oh, look, there's Hank. Oh, yeah, she's going to be mad, whatever, you know? So you start thinking. And I started blacking out, you know, almost the whole time I was out there. And I was only out there 6 months, but it was a rough 6 months, you know? I don't remember most of it. A lot of the information I have is hearsay based on what other people told me about that time. But it was brutal. And the last night that I drank, you know, I was having a party for somebody. It was a reason to have a party because I don't care. Yeah, I didn't like this girl, but you know, sure, we'll have a party for her. Why not, right? And I was drunk before everybody got there, and it was apparently her birthday, and somebody brought a birthday cake, and I brought the birthday cake out, and everybody sang happy birthday. And you know, if you're in AA long enough, you really know how to character assassinate people, right? It's like a skill we get here, right? And so I stood there, and I basically took this girl's inventory in front of all of our friends, right, and humiliated her and was horribly, horribly mean to her. And, you know, I don't remember it, so I'm, you know, I don't remember feeling it, but I remember hearing that it was horrible. And the only moment that I really remember that night was I was out of it, and apparently some guy who was a friend of mine was trying to help me go to bed or put me to bed so that I would, you know, sleep it off. And as he put me to bed, he decided, you know, that he wanted some payback for that, right? And I couldn't stop it from happening, right? Because I was so drunk and I was so out of my mind that I was paralyzed. And I had to black out at some point again in that moment because there was nothing I could do about it. And that wasn't the first time that that had happened. I'd been sexually assaulted many times in my drinking. And I was always willing to pay that price. Because as long as I could drink and as long as I could black out, I wouldn't remember it. I wouldn't remember it. But this one I remember, right? And I could not get it out of my head. And I woke up the next morning and I said a prayer that I believe every alcoholic says at some point or another. And that prayer has helped me. And I don't know who I said it to. Like, I didn't grow up in a religious home. My father was an atheist at best, right? At best, he was an atheist, right? And my mother was a fall-away Southern Baptist. So nobody talked about God in my house. I remember asking my dad when I was 5 who God was. He said he was. That was literally the end of my spiritual upbringing. So I had no understanding of what a higher power was or what spirituality or any of that stuff. And so when I said that prayer that morning, I didn't even realize I had said a prayer, because if you would have said that I said a prayer, I would have been like, oh, shut up. And but I had said that, and so I don't even know who I said it to. I went in my room and I detoxed for a couple of days. And then my mother, being the beautiful, wonderful Al-Anon that she is, finally beat my door down and she said, you need to go to a meeting. I remember thinking, oh, God, not again, not with those people. Like, no, I'm not going, right? No, not going. And I shook and I sweated and I, you know, my phone didn't ring because I had no friends at that point based on the night before. And I eventually couldn't stand my own company, so I put on my best outfit and I ended up going to an AA meeting, right? And somehow y'all knew I was new. Not sure if it was the bikini top or the Daisy Dukes or the candies I was wearing, but y'all knew I was new, and you were super, super nice to me, right? You were walking up and, hi, how are you? Are you new? And I was like, no, I'm not new. No, I've been here many, many, many times. And they're like, oh, well, you want to sit down? I was like, oh, yeah, sure, whatever. And you guys were super nice to me. And I have to tell you, like, it's so important for us to be seen as alcoholics, especially when we first get here. Like, I needed to know that I wasn't invisible. I don't know about you, but I still have this, actually, 3,000 years later. I still think I'm invisible sometimes when I walk into a room. I still think that. I still think nobody can see me, nobody knows me, nobody recognizes me, nobody's going to talk to me. That's still a part of my brain chemistry. Right? So when I got here, especially at 18 years old, I really believed that I was invisible. But when I walked into the room and all these nice AA people with all their teeth were being nice to me and like, hey, how are you? Do you want coffee? Do you need a cigarette? You know, like whatever it was, I was surprised. They asked me my name. They actually remembered my name. I mean, my name's not difficult, but for some reason, people never remember my name. It's hilarious, but mostly because they think I'm supposed to be a man, but I'm not, in case you didn't notice. So it was so important for me to be remembered, right? It was interesting during COVID, because during COVID, it was a whole different experience with newcomers. How many of you guys got sober during COVID? Yeah, I mean, you guys are the first generation, different generation in Alcoholics Anonymous. You're the COVID generation. Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't have generations, because Alcoholics Anonymous has been the same for as long as it's been around. But that was the only time we had a very different experience. And that was amazing, because I don't know that I could have done it. I don't know that I could have done it that way, you know? But I'm grateful for those of you that did, right? And so it's important, and people were super nice to me. And the truth is I was really lucky when I got sober, because I landed in a group of people who were roughly the same age as me, right? And back then, there was like five of us, no. back then, like getting sober at 18 wasn't as common as it is now. It's a lot more common now. And but I landed in a group of people who literally latched onto me and just dragged me around from meeting to meeting to meeting to, you know, to event to event to event to, you know, convention to convention to convention to dance. They never said, hey, do you want to go? Never once did they say, hey, Quince, do you want to go? They just said, get in the car, right? Be in front of your house at this time, right? And if I wasn't, they'd just come in my house and get me, right? And so if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, I hope to God that you're in the middle of a group of people that have latched onto you and are watching you. Because between the time you get here and the time that Alcoholics Anonymous actually sinks in, it could be a minute, right? It could be a minute. And you need that distraction. We just want you to stay distracted long enough until Alcoholics Anonymous and God finally kick into your life, right? Because that can take a minute. It took a really long time for me. But that's really, you know, that was the greatest thing that ever happened to me, was landing in a bunch of people who didn't ask if I wanted to be there. They just dragged me around, you know? But again, you have to remember the thinking that I came into. I kept falling victim to my own beliefs, right? And I really believed that because I had been here for a minute, that I knew what I was doing and I didn't need to ask for help. So I was more than happy to go to events. I was more than happy to go to lots and lots and lots of meetings. But I really didn't want a sponsor, right? And I really, really didn't want a home group. And I wasn't going to read the big book, because y'all are sicker than me. Remember, I told you that at the beginning. Y'all are way sicker than me, right? So I started to happen. Any of you happen in meetings? Any of you? Right? Oh, yeah, you're all a bunch of liars. Okay. So I started to happen, right? And the way I would happen is I would go to meetings, right? I'd make a bunch of friends, get a bunch of commitments, right? Start making a bunch of decisions based on self that made you want to punch me in the face, right? Y'all started to talk behind my back, and I don't really like that. So I've got to build a case about why I'm right about how much of a moron you are, right? And I got to go, right? Because I can't throw you out of a meeting, unfortunately. It's a tradition, apparently. But I can leave, right? And the greatest thing about getting sober in Los Angeles, not only are there 3,000 meetings a week in Los Angeles, but if you cross a mountain range or a major freeway, you'll never see those people ever again, right? So I had gotten sober on the west side of Los Angeles, right? Went to a bunch of meetings, got a bunch of commitments, you know, did all of that stuff, started to make decisions, built a case and said, I got to go. Right? I have got to go. So I crossed the Santa Monica Mountains and I ended up in the West Valley, right? That's where I ran into Bernard, right? Wound up in the West Valley. Now all of a sudden I'm in the West Valley. Make a whole bunch of friends, get to a whole bunch of meetings, get a whole bunch of commitments, right? Start to make a whole bunch of decisions based on self that make you want to punch me in the face. Y'all have some not so nice things to say about me and I can't have that. So I got to build a case, right? So I start to build a case and I decide to cross the 405 freeway and go into the East Valley, right? Poof! I never saw those people again until I went to the San Fernando Valley Convention every year, right? Obviously, this is way before Facebook and Instagram. Like, now you see people forever. And oh, it's unfortunate, but... sorry, did I say that out loud? Anyway, so I ended up in the East Valley. Again, one more time. Made a whole bunch of friends, got to a whole bunch of meetings, had a whole bunch of commitments, started to make a whole bunch of decisions based on self that made you want to punch me in the face. And now y'all are talking behind my back and saying all sorts of kinds of nice things. But this time, right, this time, not only am I building a case against y'all, because y'all are crazy, right? We already talked about this. You're drama queens and gossip mongers. Remember, we had this conversation. But now I'm building a case against Alcoholics Anonymous. Because now I'm almost 13 years sober, and this crap doesn't work, right? I'm almost 13 years sober, and not only has my life not changed since I got sober, but I remember every horrible moment of it, right? At least when I was drinking, I didn't remember nothing, right? Now I can't forget anything, right? So I had said to a friend of mine, I said, I'm going to go to one more meeting. One more meeting. It's the last meeting I am ever going to go to. And if I don't hear something different, I am done. With Alcoholics Anonymous and you people, I'm done, right? Well, apparently I had a sponsor, because the reason I ended up at the meeting I was at, this woman was my sponsor. I'd never worked a step with her or gone through the book with her. I needed somebody to give me a cake every year. Like, that was the purpose. Wasn't that the point of having a sponsor? Oh, no? Oh, I missed that boat. Anyway, but she was at this meeting, and I thought, if I'm going to leave Alcoholics Anonymous, I should at least let somebody know I'm leaving in case anybody's looking for me. I was so intoxicated by myself. Anyway, so I go to this meeting, and I walk in, and it's a big book study, right? Now, look. I've never been to a big book study in 13 years, right? Hot guys don't go to big book studies. Unfortunately, actually, they do. The hot, smart guys go to big book studies. But I wasn't looking for smart. Just in case. Didn't need them to be smarter than me. I just needed them to be cute. And so I didn't go to big book studies, right? And I walk into this meeting, and there's all these old-timers in this meeting, and I'm like, uh-oh. Clue to anybody who's looking for a way to leave, don't go to meetings where there's old-timers. They'll save your life. They'll save your life without you even knowing it. It's gross. I know, because I do it all the time. But I go into this meeting, there's all these old-timers, and at the front of the room, there was this crusty old guy, and, you know... And crusty, oh God, like Bernard, crusty, and he was at the front of the room, and he would read. He read like 5 pages out of the big book, right? And it's a sniper meeting. You know what a sniper meeting is, right? Nobody raises their hand. They just call on you. They're like, hey, you share. It's a dangerous meeting. You share, right? And I'm sitting there with my arms crossed and my snarl on, like. I dare you. And he's like, hey, you happy pants, why don't you share, right? So I vomit all over this meeting about how much I hate you people, and I hate Alcoholics Anonymous, and this crap doesn't work, and I don't want to be here, and I'm tired of baby, 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 baby. It's disgusting, right? Like, we've all seen dry alcoholics vomit all over a meeting before. Yes, it was just my turn. And so I vomit all over this meeting about how much I hate it here. And because that was the one thing I really did learn in 13 years is that no matter what's going on with you, walk into a meeting and tell on yourself. That's the one thing I had really learned. And so I did. And at the end of the meeting, another crusty old timer walks up to me like Mike, and he says, and he puts his hand on my arm and he says, Quincy, he says, AA is full of sick people. Do not expect them to act well. And I didn't know if he was talking about you or if he was talking about me, right? And I wasn't going to ask either. But in that moment, he gave me a moment of grace. He gave me a moment of grace because basically what he said to me in that moment was, you don't have to get loaded to start over. You don't have to know everything at 13 years sober, and you can start over whenever you want to. Whenever you want to. And it was amazing. Like there was a level of freedom that happened in that moment that was stunning for me, right? The next person that walked up to me was the craziest, scariest person I had ever met in my entire life. She's like Diane. She was the kind of person whose whole deportment shouted that she had a real answer. And I'm not sure if you know this about me, I wasn't really looking for one, right? So she was terrifying. But she walked right through my force field and shoved her card in my hand and she said, Quincy, I'm really good at doing column work, and if you want to get free of those resentments, I can help you. And I remember thinking, what resentments is she talking about? I don't even know. She's like, I don't have any resentments. What is she talking about? Crazy lady, you know? And obviously she could see right through me. And so I called the crazy lady. Right? And I said, what do I have to do? She said, Quincy, I just want you to make a list of everybody you're mad at and exactly why you're mad at them, and then come to my house. I said, all right, fine. So I did that. I went to her house. We sat down in her study, and she opened her big book. And it was all fully yellow highlights and blue writing and notes and all kinds of crap. I was like, I'm with the queen of Alcoholics Anonymous, obviously. And because I opened my book, there was not one mark and a bird flew out. So I was like, I never opened this book. I have no idea what's in it. And she took me to the pages on the inventory process and she explained to me how it was explained to her what the column work looked like, right? And I had never done column work before. I had written an inventory where somebody said, yeah, just write down everything that, you know, every hurt feeling you've ever had. It was a book, right? It was, and I was painting the greatest picture of how I was such a victim of all you people, and if you people would just die, I'd be fine, you know? But I had never really done step work. I had never really done any kind of inventory work because, again, I would just get well enough in every time something gnarly happened in alcohol in my life, that I would get a little freedom and I'd be like, okay, I'm good. Pain's gone. Good. I can move on, right? But I would never really do all the work. And so she showed me how to do the inventory process. And this is usually where I put in my 30-second minute commercial about there is absolutely no wrong way to do Alcoholics Anonymous. There's no wrong way to do this. Other than to not do it. That's the only wrong way to do this. I used to be up here at the podium and I would say, if you're not doing AA like this, then you're not doing it right. And that kind of attitude and that kind of message kills people, right? Because I don't know about you, but if I don't think I can do it perfectly, then I'm not doing it at all, right? But the truth is that all of us get here with a different level of experience, a different level of willingness, different level of education, different level of understanding. And Alcoholics Anonymous is amazing because Alcoholics Anonymous meets you where you are. Always. It meets every person where they are. Right? And I was so grateful for that. She took me through the big book page for page, word for word, and she taught me how to identify my alcoholism in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know what it meant to be an alcoholic. There were a lot of years that I was sober that we used to say a long time ago, 100 years ago, literally, it's better to be sober by accident than drunk on purpose, right? And I believed that. What if I'm not an alcoholic? Well, then if I'm not an alcoholic, then being sober won't kill me, right? But being drunk could. And there was a lot of years that I was like, I'm not getting drunk because that bitch is not going to have more time than me. Right? Like, that's a thing, okay? I'm not going to pretend that's not a thing. That's a thing. It only works for so long, but that's a thing. And so there were all kinds of reasons that I stayed sober, none of which were healthy, none of which gave me any skills, none of which gave me any freedom, none of which are in the alcohol in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. None of those. None of those suggestions are in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So when she took me through the big book and she taught me how to identify my disease, all of a sudden I was 100% clear on what it was that made me an alcoholic. What makes me an alcoholic isn't how long I drank, right? What I drank. But what happens to me when I drink is what makes me an alcoholic. So the fact that I was 18 years old when I got sober and I drank probably for less than 5 years doesn't mean anything, right? But every time I drank, the things that happened to me and the person that I became and the phenomenon of craving that happened within my body, right? The physical allergy that happened as a result of me drinking, that happened every time. Every time. And I didn't need to drink for 30 years. I didn't need to drink for, you know, 5 solid years. I just needed to drink for as long as I did. And I got here knowing that what was happening to me wasn't normal, but I didn't know why. And when she took me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, all of a sudden I was 100% clear on what made me an alcoholic. It also explains the mental obsession. I didn't even know, I knew there was a mental obsession, but I thought it meant I was mentally obsessed with alcohol. I wasn't mentally obsessed with alcohol. I was mentally obsessed with whatever I need out here to make this feel good in here. And in the beginning, it was drugs and alcohol. Then it became boys. Then it became shopping. Then it became all kinds of different things. Because that's what my alcoholism does. It manifests and shows up in different ways, no matter how long I'm sober. Right? Because my way of solving problems in here is to use stuff out here. That's it. That's my biggest problem with my mental obsession. Right? And I'm really good at making you wrong. I'm not good at taking responsibility for anything. I'm not good at being aware of how I affect other people. I'm not good at looking at my behaviors and saying, that's not working, right? But I'm really good at making you the problem. And if you're the problem, then my solution is just to get rid of you, right? And I got rid of a lot of people for a lot of years, you know? She also took me through that book, and she taught me how to explain, how to identify the solution to my alcoholism. She said, because Quincy, she said, I may be your sponsor, she said, but there's going to come a day when you hate me. And you're going to need to know that there's a solution that works even if you hate me. And she was right. Like, the next week, I hated her. Because she told me something I wasn't ready to hear. She said some truth things that were not very nice, you know. You don't say that in public. We weren't in public, but it was still out loud, and that was enough. But she said, you're going to hate me. And you need to know that Alcoholics Anonymous works even if you hate me. And she was right, because I did the column work on her, and it worked, and it resolved my resentment at her. When she took me through the inventory process, for the first time ever in my life, I experienced a level of freedom I had never experienced before in my life, ever. Within the first 5 minutes of going through the columns that she had me go through, I was free of that bondage of self, right? Me hating you is bondage of self. Me building a case against you is bondage of self. Me making you responsible for my pathetic life is bondage of self. Me lying to you, me being afraid I'm going to hurt you, me being afraid of telling the truth, me being afraid of showing up, whatever it is, that is bondage of self. And I did not understand that. And it wasn't until she took me through the inventory process that I got to understand what that was. I'd, you know, never really done inventory with her before, or anybody at that point. So when she said, I have 7 columns, I was like, okay. And please do not come up here and argue with me about, oh, it's 4 columns, it's 5 columns in the book. I don't care if it's 1,000 columns, okay? If it works, get it on. Like, just do it, right? I don't care. And the book doesn't care either. The book can be interpreted a million different ways. And every interpretation is right. It's right. My only caveat is that if you go through the big book or you go through the steps and you don't experience the level of freedom that Alcoholics Anonymous promises you, just ask somebody else to take you through until you get there. Because let's be 1,000% clear about what Alcoholics Anonymous is offering. The only thing that Alcoholics Anonymous offers, the only thing that Alcoholics Anonymous offers, is freedom. That's it, right? That's the only thing Alcoholics Anonymous has to offer. And don't worry, if that's not what you're looking for, it's not coming for you. Okay? It's not like, hi, I'm your freedom and you're going to have me. No, that's not how it goes. You usually have to get in a tremendous amount of pain before you even become willing to bleed, sweat, and cry the amount you're going to have to bleed, sweat, and cry in order to get that freedom. Because it's earned, baby. It's not given, it's earned. And nobody can earn it for you, right? But that's all Alcoholics Anonymous has to offer is freedom. So if that's what you're looking for, if you're looking to be free in your body, if you're looking to be free in your mind, if you're looking to be free in your life, we have that solution. And it's not just my solution. It's not just available for me. It's available for anybody. It's available for anybody. All you got to do is sit down and read the book, preferably not alone. And the reason I say that is because when I got sober, I don't remember this, when I got sober, they used to tell us to read the big book so we would go to sleep. Right? Because we had, I don't know if this is still a thing with newcomers, but we had horrible insomnia. They didn't give us no medications. They just handed you the big book and said, take a nap. Take a nap. Right? And we would. I'd read like 3 pages. I was out, right? So, and not only that, I don't know about you, but, you know, I know now today that I'm smart, but when I got here, I didn't think I was smart. I didn't think I was intelligent. I dropped out of high school 3 times, right? Because apparently I couldn't figure out how to do that right either, right? So I didn't think I was smart. So when I was reading the big book, I believed that I didn't understand what it was saying. But when I sat down across from somebody else, my sponsor, who helped me understand what the paragraphs were talking about, what the sentences were talking about, would teach me how to ask questions like, what does that mean? All of a sudden, I could comprehend what the big book was talking about. And as a result, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous became my answer to my problems. Not Linda, not Terry, not my husband, as cute as he is. He's just checking to see if he's awake. And, not nobody, but the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is the answer to my problems today, right? I asked that crazy lady to be my sponsor. And she was so excited, she looked like she was going to eat me. Like, that's how bad it was. She scared me just a little bit. And I said, yeah, sure. She's like, Quincy, I would love to sponsor you. And I was like, that's when you should run, just saying. She said, but I have some requirements, right? And I'm thinking in my head, well, I have some requirements that you have no requirements, right? Because I don't like people with requirements, right? But I didn't say that because I'm not dumb, and I was dying. I was dying as only you can die at 13 years sober, right? And I said, okay, well, what are they? She said, well, Quincy, she said, I need you to call me every day for the first 30 days. She said, we need to build a relationship. You need to know it's okay to call me. And she said, you know, so I need you to call me every day. And she said, and then after that 30 days, I need you to call me at least once a week thereafter. She said, because if I, you know, if we don't have a connection, you're not going to know how to get the answer. I was like, all right. I mean, that sounds logical. How do you argue with that, right? She said, I need you to go to 3 meetings a week. She said, anything less than 3 meetings a week, she said, you're really just a visitor to Alcoholics Anonymous. She said, I need you to be a member. And she said, I need you to have commitments at those meetings. And she said, one of those meetings needs to be a meeting that I go to. She said, because if I don't see you, I don't know you, I can't help you. I was like, okay, I don't have an argument for that either. She said, I have a sponsees meeting at my house once a month. She said, we're going through the 12 and 12 right now. She said, I'd really like it if you would show up for that. I remember thinking, oh, here we go. I was like, okay. She said, but this next one, Quincy, this next requirement, she said, it might kill you. I was like, oh, bring it. I'm all about death, right? Said, what could it possibly be? She said, well, Quincy, she said, it is a requirement of my sponsorship that whenever you're in front of the room, whether you are taking a cake, leading a meeting, speaking in a meeting, whatever it is, she said, I require that you wear a skirt or a dress. And I remember thinking, where does it say that in the big book? Because I'm a smart ass, right? Because defiance is our number one characteristic, right? But I didn't say anything. And I said, okay, fine. But I was like, I'm never going to be up at the podium, like, ever. Nobody likes me. I have no friends. And I only had one dress. Like, you don't know this about me, but at my old Valley Club days, right, I wore tore-up jeans, flip-flops. I dressed like Stevie. Tore-up jeans, flip-flops, hair on top of my head, no makeup on, nothing, right? Like, I would stand up here, and I would hold my boobs, and I would cuss every other word. Like, that was who I was. So for me to wear a dress was not a thing. Like, I wasn't that kind of a girl. And so she takes me through the big book. I start to become on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous, and you all started to pay attention, unfortunately. And you started asking me to speak at meetings and sponsor you and do all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, what is happening, right? What is happening? And so I was irritated because now I got to get a dress to get up and talk to you people, okay? And I was like, I don't want to spend my money on dresses. Like, who wants to wear a dress? Nobody wants to wear a dress, right? So I would get up here and I would speak and I would, you know, tell my story, and then I would bitch about how I gotta wear this stupid dress and blah, 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 and my sponsor this and da, da, da. And I made the mistake of doing that little rhetoric when she was in the room one night. Yeah, be careful, careful. And she comes up to me at the end of the meeting, and she was the kind of person that could sit in the back of the room and just give you a look, and you would feel a hand come from Siberia and just smack you on the back of the head, right? And I was like, what? Right? She's like, I'm like, what? 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 I don't understand. She goes, really, Quincy? Really? You don't understand the whole dress thing? I'm like, no, I don't understand. I said, it's just you trying to control me. She goes, she started laughing. She was like, that's hilarious. She's like, okay. She said, no. She said, Quincy, she said, the easiest thing I'm ever going to ask you to do is to put your feet into a dress and zip it up. That's the easiest thing I'm ever going to ask you to do. And she said, and if you're not willing to do that, she said, you're not going to be willing to do anything else, and you're not going to waste my time. And she turned around and walked away. And I never bitched about it again. And I know that every man in this room is wondering, do I have to wear a dress to recover? Garrett, you've worn a dress, right? A couple times. And look how recovered you are. You don't have to wear a dress to recover, but you do have to be willing to do the stuff you don't want to do. You do. Let's just be really clear, right? This morning, I went upstairs, I took a shower, washed my hair, shaved my legs. Ooh. For y'all. Shaved my legs, blow dried my hair, painted my face, and put on a dress. There's nothing convenient about that. Right? Because just before that, Sari saw me downstairs in the restaurant, as did Mike, in my pajamas. Eating breakfast. There would have been nothing wrong with me just coming up here in my pajamas. I had clothes on. It wasn't like I was naked or nothing. I didn't have any underwear on, but you didn't know that. Until now. Right? Until now. Yeah, I even have a bra on for y'all. I mean, that's inconvenient. I don't know. You guys wear one and then you tell me what it's like, okay? And but that's inconvenient. And if recovery is convenient, it's not recovery. And that's what I learned. Because I don't know about you, the only thing I ever want to do in life, ever, you could ask me at any given moment, what do you want to do? The only thing I'm ever going to tell you is I want to take a nap. That's the only thing I ever want to do. You know why? It's as close to dead as you can get without the commitment. Right? It's my favorite state. Right? I don't want to be here. I don't know how to be here. Right? I came to Alcoholics Anonymous with two feelings. I either wanted to punch you in the face or sleep with you, and if you were lucky, you got them both at the same time. Okay? Today, I have a whole plethora of feelings and a whole plethora of new ideas, and I can actually stand up here and not say the F word for over 45 minutes. Wow. That's amazing. That's a personal record, I think. You know, but that's Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know how to behave when I got here. I was worried about being cute and getting attention. I didn't know how to behave in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had no idea. I was obnoxious. I didn't know how to get up here and tell my story and relate to you guys. I see people now going to meetings and being a speaker with notes in front of them. Mm-hmm. You want to be a good speaker? Go through the big book. Sponsor people. Continue to work the program on a daily basis. Be willing to be inconvenienced. Show up. You won't need a note for nothing. Right? Have a real experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. Get connected to who you are and who you're supposed to be. I had no clue who I was supposed to be. I didn't believe in a power greater than me. I didn't even want to believe in a power greater than me. And, you know, my idea of what God is, kind of what the speaker said last night, the second I put a name on it, it changes, right? But for me, I really believe that the universe wants everybody to be happy, me included. And the only person who gets in the way of my happiness is me. So if I'm not happy, if I'm not okay, it's not because of you. It may show up because of you. I love to hate you, right? I love to hate you. But me hating you is just evidence that there's something going on in me that needs to be resolved. Because it's never about you. You're always going to be you, right? But you get to show up in my life to teach me about me. That's why you're here. That's why I'm here. I'm going to teach you about you, right? That's what we do. That's what Linda was for me. That's what my sponsor is today. Because even though I'm 36 years, 70,000 days, whatever the hell it is, right? I still have a lot of growing to do. As long as I'm alive, there's something to learn. And I love learning today. You know, I love learning today. I have an amazing life today because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a person I didn't even know I was capable of being, right? I got married, had two babies, got divorced, was a single mom for a long time. And then I got married again to somebody I never in a million years would have thought I ever would have been married to, right? He and I knew each other when I was 18 years old. We did not like each other. I thought he was an asshole. He thought I was crazy. We were both right. We were both right. And we would stay, you know, like we weren't really friends, but we had a lot of the same friends. And he would come in and out of my life at different times in my life. And we would see each other, and I was like, oh, there's that guy again. You know, whatever. I had all these opinions about him, right? And then he even dated a sponsee of mine. Oh, that was enough. And then, you know, like, I don't know, almost 6 years ago, I got asked to speak at on Sunday. I was a Sunday morning speaker at ACUPA, you know, the meeting nobody goes to. And just kidding. And I was a Sunday morning speaker at ACUPA, and he happened to be in the room with his daughter. And his daughter was trying to get sober. She didn't even know if she wanted to get sober until she went to a YPA event. Right, which is why YPA is important. Us old timers who are like, oh no, we don't chant, we don't do no singing stuff, we don't do your, it's disrespectful. There's a place for everybody here. And all of us get sober differently. All of us, right? But she was at this event and I did my thing and she ended up asking one of the people I sponsor to sponsor her. And so he started hanging around. Here he comes, here's that guy again. Oh God. But I loved his daughter, right? And so they would come to the meetings and we, you know, he and I started to be friends and he started flirting with me first. He says it the other way around. It may have been me because I can't help myself. But he started flirting with me and we started hanging out and, you know, all of us were around and I did everything I could to try to not fall in love with him and not be in a relationship with him. I told him I had a black soul and a dead heart and all kinds of stuff. It's almost guaranteed to get you to fall in love with you if somebody tells you that. And then we started hanging out, and his daughter was trying to get sober. She was in sober living for like 90 days, and she got itchy. She got itchy around 90 days, and she's like, yeah, I don't really want to do this anymore. And she went out and she overdosed, and they got her to the hospital in time, and she got sober again, and she went back into treatment, and she was at the sober living, and 90 days, crept around again, and she's like, didn't want to be there anymore, and she left, and 5 days later, she overdosed and died. And that's what happens here. It happens a lot. You know, I'm a member of the Pacific Group. I go to the big top meeting on Wednesday nights, and we lost three members last week, just last week. And this is a real thing. Like, you guys die a lot easier than we did in the 80s. Like, in the 80s, it took a lot more effort to die. Today, you don't even need to make an effort to die. You just die. And it's no joke. And it's devastating. You know, 2 weeks later, my nephew died in a drunk driving accident. And we lose people here all the time, right? We lose people in life. Life just happens. Like, sobriety doesn't guarantee you happiness and cars and houses and marriages and children. It doesn't guarantee you any of that. It just guarantees you the opportunity to deal with life on life's terms with skills. With skills. I've never had to do any of this alone. He didn't have to walk through his daughter dying alone. We did it together, right? And none of us have to do any of this alone. I'm so grateful for the life that Alcoholics Anonymous gave me. If you would have said to me when I was new, and I would have been up here speaking, I'd have been like, that bitch is crazy. You know, I'm not staying here that long. She's a loser. She got nothing to do. You know what? I wouldn't be anywhere else. If you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, welcome to the greatest adventure of your life. Buckle up. See you later.